This is ESPN Crick Info.
Welcome to Talking T20, where we, in a whole new series, are going to be talking about the Vitality T20 Blast. I'm Daniel Norcross, and with me, I have a man who's very familiar to these surroundings, the assistant to the general manager at the St. Lucia Stars, formerly the St. Lucia Zooks, more of which shortly, Jared Kimber.
I think I'm actually special assistant.
Well, you're certainly a special assistant, of that there's no doubt. Firstly, welcome aboard. Secondly, is it true that it's just possible, end up being David Warner's boss this coming August?
Stranger things have happened.
Not many, Jared.
When you get to the heights that I get to, Dan, other people might go on and on about the chance to be in charge of David Warner, but for me, it's just another step. So I can see why you would obsess over it, but it's just my world domination plan, David Warner today and Cristiano Ronaldo tomorrow.
Well, I want to get a little bit of insight before we move on to the Vitality T20 Blast, which kicks off this week, I'm very delighted to say.
Do you get vitamin? What is Vitality, should I ask?
I wouldn't.
Okay.
I'm not sure. It's on the back of buses. I think it's awfully good for you.
Good. Vitality sounds like it should be good for you.
Do not try to obfuscate. This is a joy. It's a joyful prospect to be David Warner's boss for any length of time. I just want you to let me know, if there are three things you could do as his boss, what would they be?
Well, I think I'd want a bat first. I mean, he basically, his bats changed the laws of cricket, didn't they? Because they were getting so big. I'd like a free bat.
You'd like a free bat. This is something you would demand from David Warner. And now what would you do to make his game better? Or what would you do just for fun? Maybe just make him make you breakfast or something? I don't know.
What do you think he'd make? Huevos Franchos?
Huevos Franchos?
Possibly. If I was going to change his game, the only thing I'd do, realistically, is make him bowl leg spin again.
Oh.
Because he bowled quite decent leg spin back in the day, and yeah. that's being on trend. You know, that's the little black dress of T20 cricket. A little black dress is still on trend?
I think so.
Yeah.
I'll give you the rest of the episode to come up with your third and final idea for what we do with David Warner. But we're here not to talk just about David Warner. We're here to talk about the Vitality T20 Blast, which is, it's all being played, I say, in a block. Not quite a block. Yet again.
Not a block like other tournaments.
No, not a block like other tournaments. There's an English way of doing these things. And that is that we do it in sort of two blocks. So the way the English season has been created, it's a rather odd sort of melange, isn't it? The 4-day game, then 50 over cricket, then another 4-day game, the final of the 50 over cricket, now the start of the T20, some 4-day cricket, and then some more T20, which presents a certain problems for general managers and people who will be in positions like you when you go to work for the St. Lucia Stars. You don't have these issues. Do you think that impacts badly on England's premier T20 tournament? I say premier T20 tournament. It is really their only one, but we'll come to the elephant in the room later.
Yeah, it's tough. It's funny. I spent a lot of time talking to coaches over here about that. And the one thing they say, it's all great, all these things that you suggest in your columns, but we can't do any of them. They could basically make two acquisitions a year, which is their overseas players for the T20 Blast. If they're lucky, there might be a player who another county doesn't rate as a 4-day player who's loose enough that they can bring into the T20. But compared to, the CPL, where you're building a franchise almost, from the start, almost every couple of years, it's completely different. So it's a very tough situation. It's almost like club cricket and then looking for the overseas pro. So, you hope that your mate knows Faf du Plessis.
And these overseas pros come in for shorter periods of time, obviously. I mean, we're looking at some of these. Carlos Brathwaite's going to be here for a bit. Marcus Stoinis is around for 9 games. Surrey have already got issues themselves. We'll hear from Alex Stewart later in the program. Around because he wanted Australian players, and there's this T20 tri series taking place in Zimbabwe. So this causes unique issues for English teams, but it also presumably creates an awful lot more opportunities for homegrown professionals. You've got 18 counties. Some of the fringe players who aren't getting a look in 4-day cricket, 4-day cricket now being in two divisions, means that the pressure to stay up, stay in Division 1, not to get relegated or to get promoted from Division 2. It's so intense that perhaps it means that some of the younger players don't get as much of a look in Red Bull cricket, but in T20 cricket, we start to see some more unfamiliar names, don't we? Guys that you hear whispers about, the coaches talking about. I mean, one obvious one would be Will Jacks at Surrey. That is, everyone's been talking about this guy. Finally, we're going to get to see him. He goes from sort of playing second 11 cricket for the first half of the season to being in front of a packed house at Lord's and the Oval this week, the first two games Surrey play. They've already sold out. There'll be 26,000-27,000 at Lord's, and there'll be 25,000 at the Oval. That's kind of a weird thing about being an English professional cricketer, isn't it?
Yeah, well, Ed Pollock, is it Pollock?
Yeah, it is.
I keep forgetting. Yeah. You know, he basically went from what? Not even. I don't even think he was second 11 with.
No, I think it was in the university.
Yeah, last year, and then suddenly he's at finals day. You know, and starring on finals day, so it does give them an opportunity. The Caribbean Premier League has five overseas players. Think perhaps the Bangladesh League might have something similar. So in England, you only have the two overseas players. Yorkshire, I think, are only going in with one overseas player because Billy Stanley picked that. So you do see these sorts of guys coming through more often. And I think there's a lot of them out there. And also probably just at the first generation of people who are brought up as T20 players. So you can almost see what happened to one day cricket in the 90s when it was the first generation of kids who from the age of 10 through to 20 really focused on one day cricket as a real sport. That's what we're now seeing from these T20 players. I think there's going to be a lot of young, exciting players come through, you know, in the next year and a half for the 100.
Well, now the 100 again, I say we will come on to the 100 at some point. Not just yet. Because first of all, we need to take a look at the format and how the tournament plays out. You've got two groups, for those of you who are unfamiliar, a North group and a South group. It works in exactly the same way as it's set up in the Royal London One Day Cup. It means you get slight anomalies. Worcestershire apparently in the North group along with Northants. It's just basically the nine teams that are further north than London is what I can
remember. I don't really know where North starts. Well, there's a lot of signs on
North
the freeways.
North starts in Northamptonshire as far as cricket is concerned. So you've got nine in the North, nine in the South. Each play each other home and away. Let's take a look. Let's start with the North group because they've been providing winners of late. Nottinghamshire, last year's winners, did the double in white ball cricket. They play on probably the perfect surface.
Not if you're a bowler.
Not if you're a bowler. But I think, you know, the ECB wants to see exciting cricket. They want to see 180 play 180. The cricket connoisseur may be just as delighted with 130 plays 131 for nine, but they're not going to get that. Trent Bridge, the kind of perfect place for it. Unfortunately, not a place that necessarily packs it out of the ground. You don't get huge crowds.
Maybe because they're afraid of being hit, because there are a lot of sixes there.
Well, that 481, of course, it's the site of that, the world record ODI score. But there's something about the Notts lineup which sort of suits itself to T20. Them, you'd say, in the North group, Hampshire in the South group, along with honourable mentions for Northants, have been dominating English T20 for the last few years. Why? You're the man who crunches the numbers. You're at St Lucia's Stars to tell them what should be going on. Why is it? What is it you've seen about Nottinghamshire that explains why they're so successful?
They have a very, very deep batting lineup, and there's no. So the problem with the Blast in general is, and you see this with a lot of franchise teams as well, there are three or four decent batsmen, and then there's a drop off. You know,
within each team.
Yeah. So, for instance, someone like Liam Dawson has been batting at, you know, 5, 6, 7, and has a very, very poor T20 record with the bat. But that's what teams have to do. Nottinghamshire don't have to do that. They can bat to 6, 7, 8 in certain games. So straight away, that is a completely different situation than what most teams have. And when we're talking quality, like last year they had Samit Patel and Brendan Taylor and Dan Christian in their middle order. Like, they're not normal players. These
as well as Hales and Ricky Vessel.
At the top.
At the top, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, and that was, Lum was retired mid-season, I think. I'm not even sure if he played any T20 games. So they had on paper this incredible batting lineup. They also then have very good bowlers. So they didn't play Stuart Broad in the final. They've gone
former T20 captain of England.
Yeah.
I mean, that's quite something.
And they could have played him. I think they just went, our team's good enough not to do that. And you've got, you know, Samit Patel obviously is a very, very good bowler. with the finger spin, and he can open the bowling. And then you've got Ishodi. They basically take a gamble on Ishodi. They know that he's going to go at 8, 9, 10 and over, especially at Trent Bridge, but that he's going to get 2-3 wickets every now and again and completely rip middle orders apart. So they're being able to do that because they have this incredible, you know, they have Gurney and Ball and Christian, you know, really good seam bowling as well. So Jake Ball's got a really good record of taking wickets, and Dan Christian's a sort of perfect all-rounder for T20 in that he can play as a batsman or a bowler depending on the lineup that you need in certain situations. It's just a very deep team in every different way, and the actual quality of the players for the Blast is just, you know, they should have really been winning for a long time, not just last year.
Dispel some myths or don't, depending on if you're not going to. Who knows? We'll find out in a minute. I've always thought that there's an over-emphasis placed on batting in T20s, on trying to pick an explosive batsman. And the reason for me thinking this was overblown is that essentially you've got seven, eight guys at the top of the order, and it takes two of them to come off. Mm-hmm. So as a general rule, a batsman will come off once every three times. I always kind of thought that the strongest T20 teams are the sides that have got the strongest bowling attacks, because their bowling attacks can win you games game after game after game. Is that where we should be looking to try to find our most powerful sides in T20? Or am I over-egging the bowling pudding?
No. Perth Scorchers, Nottingham, Sunrisers, Islamabad United have all shown that if you go in with a very strong bowling lineup, you'll be consistently good. You might not win the championship every year. Very good batting lineups quite often, you know, do very well 1 year and then disappear for a couple of years when none of the batsmen
come on. I think it's Bangalore here. You know.
Bangalore's a perfect example of a team with incredible batting lineup that didn't quite make it, almost won one championship and then disappeared for a couple of years after that. So essentially, I think what you said, if you boil it down into cricket or sports analytics speak, is you have weak link sports and strong link sports. So a strong link sport basically means that you're only, you know, you're only as good as your strongest member. And a weak link sport means you're only as good as your weakest member. So a strong link sport would be LeBron James in basketball. You can basically put four blokes around him and he'll find a way to be very good at basketball. You can put, if you put 10 duds around Lionel Messi, the ball will never get to him. So if you think of T20 cricket, basically you're bowling, you can't have a weak bowler in T20 because that weak bowler can go for 60. Right. Even on a good pitch, they can go for 60. And the teams that go in without a fifth bowler and try and patch it together usually get murdered.
And this is exactly how it didn't used to be when we were kids. I mean, when I was little, England used to go into one-day internationals with four bowlers and Gooch and Wayne Larkins to make up the other 12 overs.
Yeah,
and they get through those 12 overs for 60 runs, and we'd think, oh, that was bad.
Yeah, Andrew Simons used to bowl over. Scott Styris had a career of bowling as the fifth bowler.
Yeah. Now the fifth bowler has to be a bowler.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be very hard to win a championship in T20 without having five strong bowlers. Batting's a little bit different, because as you said, you only need one or two guys to come off. So we saw Usman Khawaja win for the Sydney Thunder a couple of years ago, because he basically came off in every game. And if Chris Gayle's done similar things, we've seen Colin Ingram basically did that for Glamorgan last year. If you've got a batsman who's that good, who comes off all the time, your batting can be a bit up and down. Whereas your bowling, I just don't think you can do that. So if you want to consistently win championships, you basically have to have a very strong bowling lineup.
Well, with that in mind, you've given us Nottinghamshire. Let's take it in the South group. Sussex.
Very strong bowling.
Very strong bowling lineup. I mean, might one argue the strongest, not just one of the strongest bowling lineups in the T20 Blast. But, you know, you put that on a par with almost any T20 franchise side around the world, and even the St. Lucia Stars.
Well, they certainly have the best death bowling in the world in one team. Like, I don't think we've ever had a team with that, you know, maybe when, trying to think, maybe Bumrah, Harbhajan and Malinga maybe for a little while at Mumbai. But you've got Mills, who's probably the best death seam bowler in the world. Chris Jordan, who's a professional death bowler. Jofra Archer, who could basically bowl anywhere. And Rashid Khan. They could be going for negative runs in the death. I mean, it is an incredible... It's almost like, you know, I mean, Mills is probably the only specialist that needs to bowl there. Maybe Jordan. Jofra Archer and Rashid Khan. I mean, might not even get to the death. And there's other players they've got too. They've got about six, seven bowlers. I think it was Hopsy's thing. He said that Will Beer might not even play. And he's a decent bowler.
They've got Danny Briggs.
Yeah.
They've also got a guy that is really worth looking out for that not a lot of people have heard of him. Delray Rawlins played in the North v South series of games that took place in Barbados, played for the South, obviously. And he was pinpointed by Paul Collingwood as a major new star. And he hits the ball an incredibly long way. He bowls these horrible darts, like South Jaya Surya, smashes it over deep mid-wicket. He's like the quintessence of this T20 character.
Yeah.
That the average English cricket fan, even a fan of domestic cricket, will probably never have heard. And we'd expect to see quite a lot of him. And he's kind of that perfect thing, isn't he, for T20? You've got your four-star bowlers. They've got enough batting. You've got someone like Delray Rawlins comes in at 6-7. That makes Sussex a really terrifying prospect. Now, they haven't actually been that terrifying a prospect in T20. You might say they've underperformed a bit, actually, given the resources they've had. But they've got Jason Gillespie. They got these four bowlers. They got those batsmen. They looking hot for you?
They look good. Jason Gillespie's theory in T20 is quite interesting because he just won with the Adelaide Strikers after being disappointing at his time with Yorkshire. So his theory, and I'm not saying this based on talking to him, but just watching the way his teams play, is stack it with bowlers, pick Rashid Khan, two very good ways to start. Mm. But also, he likes his opening batsmen to not go that hard in the power play. But once that power play finish, when they're set to go crazy.
What's the theory there?
The idea is then, by the time you get to the end of the power play, you're maybe 1 for 45 rather than 2 for 65 or 3 for 60. You've got extra wickets in hand. But also, the most important thing is what happens at the end of the power play is almost every team in the world slows down. Adelaide Strikers sped up.
Aye.
So that all the tactics that the opposition team have go completely out the window if that's the case. They've now got 9 wickets in hand. They've got 2 set batsmen who are smashing it. Because this is what I don't understand about T20 cricket. You have these players who smash the hell out of the ball in the power play. Power play ends, they start hitting singles.
Yeah.
Like, you're the set batsman.
Yeah.
You're the one who should be keep going. So it's a very interesting theory. And also that when you have Rashid Khan and Jofra Archer, especially in your team, you don't have to worry as much about making 210 every game. 180 is huge if you've got Rashid Khan. 120 is pretty big if you've got Rashid Khan in your side.
Why is he so good? I mean, we know his stats are good. You have a particular method of calculating somebody's real strike rate, if you like, and real economy rate. How does Rashid Khan stack up, and what is it that he's doing that's making it this? You are yourself a leg spinner of fine repute, Jared.
Very similar to Rashid Khan.
Very similar.
I think he's got the best smart economy rate in the world, which is a contextualized economy rate for what period of the game that he bowls in. Even his normal strike rate is obscene. I think it's, you know, hovering around 6 at the moment. The reason that he's unhittable is a combination of two facts. He basically bowls at a pace that spinners have never bowled at before. We hear about Bill O'Reilly and Derek Underwood and Sid Barnes being sort of seamers who bowled spin. But from what, 1960s onwards, spinners have been slow bowlers.
Yeah.
Rashid Khan is not particularly slow. Spinners are getting quicker. Syed Ajmal was maybe one of the first ones that we saw do this. Now, if you are bowling quicker, and we see this with, you know, it's why if you are bowling at Darren Stevens' pace, you have to move the ball a considerable margin to beat the bat. But if you're bowling at Billy Stanley's pace, you only have to move it marginally. So for Rashid Khan, he doesn't have to get a lot of spin, but just enough to beat the bat because he's bowling at such a high speed. The other thing is that he's unpickable at the moment. And I think that's partly because of the faster arm speed, but also he's only been on the scene for a little while, so we don't know how long that will last. But right at the moment, he's unpickable. Now, I had worked this out at my very low level of cricket, of like playing T20 and 30 over games, is if you bowl leg spin wrong and leg spin wrong and, you know, in any sort of AABB pattern, basically the opposition, if they can't pick it, can't hit you. It doesn't really matter how bad you bowl, as you would have seen with one of my triple bounce wrongens the other day. It doesn't really matter because even if you bowl a half tracker wrongen, they get in the position to hit it and it's in the wrong position and they spoon it up in the air. So he's basically doing that on a huge level. Now, Sunil Narine did that as well, but I think the difference is that leg spin just picks up pace off the pitch so well. While you can't pick him at that pace with that accuracy, which is, I think is more accurate than Sunil Narine, it's an incredible package. Once he starts getting picked, we'll see how good he's going to be. But at the moment, he's unplayable.
We're going to return to predictions for the South Group, the North Group, what have you. But let's just break off briefly, because earlier today, I went round to the impeccably tidy office. Can you believe it, Jared? Who would have thought that Alex Stewart's office would be the tidiest, most anal environment you have ever been in your life? to go and speak to the very great man, one of England's most leading capped players of all time, as well as, of course, most importantly, Surrey's director of cricket. And I started off by asking him about how tricky it was to have that handbrake turn from four-day cricket into T20 cricket. So I find myself in the not remotely surprisingly tidy office of Alex Stewart. Every pen is in place. There's no mess, no fuss. It's all just perfection as I look out on the people's ground here at the Oval with Surrey's director of cricket, Alex Stewart, on the eve of the start of the Vitality T20 blast. Big handbrake turn for Surrey, top of the county championship. Is that a bit of an issue?
No, not at all. It's just, you know, we always say good players, good teams have to be adaptable. So we've played nice cricket in the four-day championship and currently sat top of the league. And now it's a new competition. It's an exciting time. It's a good sort of 5-6 week period where the boys can go out there and express themselves. They can play with freedom. They can play without fear. And in front of full houses here at the Kia Oval, which when it's a Friday night, the boys almost use the term, it's the best nightclub in London on a Friday. But Thursdays are pretty tasty too, as are the other nights. So the boys are really looking forward to it. We've just had a good team meeting, squad meeting about T20 and how we've got to focus on the white ball and how we're going to go about trying to play.
Now, overseas players, there's a lot of talk that wanting to bring T20 into a block, and partly this is what the 100 tournament's been all about, trying to guarantee that you get the overseas players in for that whole time. How challenging is it for you? Because I know you have to be the man who signs these overseas players for Surrey.
Yeah, it's a real challenge. Go back to November, it was all sorted out. We had Mitch Marsh in, we had Aaron Finch in, because we'd looked at the Australian itineraries and everything, and it all fitted perfectly. We were going to lose them, or Mitch Marsh was going to obviously be with the Australian 50-over squad playing England. And that's when we had Coley coming in. And then all that changed very quickly. So, yeah, we've been scrapping around. Obviously, the Australians currently are in Zimbabwe, so we won't have Finch. We bought Nick Maddison in.
Tell us a little about him, because not that many people necessarily be as familiar as there might be.
Maddison's played a lot of T20 cricket. One, he's had a very good big bash just for a period of time, but last Australian summer he did very nicely. He has a good strike rate, strikes at around about 140. And he's played other T20 around the world, so he's experienced as well. But we want people who can change games. You know, that's the important thing. If you've got match changers, and we've probably got four or five in our team, if two or three come off, you'll win more games than you lose. So we look for that type of player, and Maddo fitted the bill and was available. And once Zimbabwe is finished, so those two will miss our first two T20s, then they'll come in for game three onwards.
So tell us a little bit about the kind of players that Surrey have got as backup, because obviously you're missing both Currans, you've been missing Jason Roy, you're missing the two overseas. We're expecting to see them come in. So who are the kind of guys in and around the fringe that we should be seeing for Surrey early on?
Well, let's talk about Ollie Pope, for example. You know, he's sort of the guy who's the young guy who has started off the season very, very well. A lot of people are talking about him for his Red Bull performances, and he's played exceptionally well. So again, he can just expand his game. You know, there's one there. Also, we'll see Mornay Morkel. You know, he will play a couple at the start. We were looking at Box Clever and try and rest him when we can, but circumstances have demanded that he will play. And even people like Rory Burns, who in a way have been big part players in T20 in recent times, will now start off in the tournament. So we're saying to all these guys who have got opportunities, grab them, make it impossible for us to leave you out when the big names do come back in. And that's a challenge which we'll see when we play Middlesex at Lord's and in Kent here on Friday. And it's who can stake a claim to say, yes, yeah, so what? Jason Roy's coming back, Aaron Finch is coming back, Maddison's coming in, the two Currans. I've done my job. I need to be picked, and I've shown you why, and I want to keep playing.
A quick word on the young players. There's a lot of young players at Surrey, like some Amaverdi, Will Jacks. They won't have experienced very often crowds of 25,000. That's going to be fantastic for them, hasn't it?
So Will Jacks, as you quite rightly mentioned, he's going to be playing. And he's a very exciting talent. We saw that in the 50-over competition. He scored a magnificent 100 against Gloucester. And he's going from strength to strength. He's just played two first-class games against Somerset and Yorkshire. So he's in a bat at the top of the order. And we've just said to him, just go and express yourself. You know, if you get out doing something, we don't mind. You know, it's when you're confused and you're not sure what to do that you get out. That's just stupid. So if your thought process is right and your execution is wrong, we'll never, ever have a go at anyone. So we just said, you can hit the ball, go out there and hit it. Go out and enjoy it. Yep, you've been playing school cricket last year. You played a bit of club cricket. Now you played a bit of first team cricket. Just go and show everyone how good you are. And the more people that watch, the better. Because you want to show why you work on a training ground, why you look to improve, so more and more people can see how good you are.
Last question. Losing quarter finalists last year in quite controversial circumstances. Didn't quite make it through the group in Royal London this season. What's the minimum expectation for Surrey this season?
I always say every competition we enter, we enter to win. So that's what it is. It's to win it. And then when you don't, you look at why. You know, so we know in a 50-over competition we didn't qualify first time. We haven't got to the final for, 4 years. We didn't play well enough. In two games, we were terrible and paid the penalty. 2020, you've got to make sure that come the big games, we perform. So we know it's going to be tough the first two stroke, first four games before everyone comes back. But it gives people an opportunity to go out there and play their part, who, when we're picking our very best side, may not be in it to begin with. So if people just go out there and express themselves, that's what we'll ask of our players, and then anything is achievable. But we're entering it to win it.
Alex Stewart, all the very best. Thanks for joining us on Cricket Info.
Thank you.
So, Surrey blast off this week, as we said earlier, with two mammoth games, one at Lord's, one at the Oval. Around about 50,000 people are going to attend their two matches. This for a tournament that's been under a little bit of a shadow. But let's take a quick look at Surrey. They're riding high in the County Championship. They've been renowned this season for bringing in an extraordinary number of youngsters, 19-year-olds, the likes of Amaverdi. I'm not sure, after listening to what Alex Stewart told me earlier, that we're going to see too much of him. He's got a bit of work to do, I think, on batting and fielding. But the likes of Will Jacks, Ollie Pope, there's, of course, the two Curran brothers who will come back into the side at the end of their international commitments. They're a very young side. A very exciting side, the likes of Ben Folkes. How do they fit into your kind of metric here? I mean, where are their strengths and weaknesses, would you say?
Well, the interesting thing is that you talk about someone like Ollie Pope, who obviously everyone's talking about and has an incredible record. I think I saw him make runs of some description at the Oval this year.
Well, he has not failed to make runs.
Was it Glamorgan?
He's averaging about 95.
Yeah, I think against Glamorgan, he might have made runs.
Maybe in a Royal London game, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, he looked from the minute he batted, he looked a different class to pretty much everyone else in that game. But T20-wise, he's not been a star so far. So his smart strike rate so far is 118. He averages 25. He's a strike rotator in T20 cricket.
He comes in normally around about 5 or 6, doesn't he? So that's the point when you really want to be teeing off.
It's not a good strike rate for that. So I think they're a bit unknown. I think all the talent is there. With the Currans, it gives them a flexibility if they want to sort of back in a very strong bowling attack. It also gives them flexibility if they want to have a very good long batting lineup. And I think that's one of the most important things is, especially you've got to remember that a lot of this modern T20 is about matchups. And I think teams still get matchups slightly wrong, but essentially having the ability to pick, you know, an extra seam bowler or an extra spinner or an extra batsman at any time is huge. And that, if they can get themselves to the finals with the Currans around, I think, and Ricky Clark, obviously, that just gives them a huge advantage, especially if they can get one of the Currans and Ricky Clark to bat top six or top seven. Suddenly they have the ability to really attack with their bowlers. And I think that is where they're an exciting team.
Their main issue is going to be absentees at the start of the tournament. They don't get their overseas players. We were talking about this at the top of the programme. They've got Finch and Nick Maddinson coming over to play, but they're out in Zimbabwe, so they're not available till the third game. They're not going to get the likes of the Curran brothers and Jason Roy back in until they play maybe 4 or 5 games.
Yeah.
So, look, they could win a couple of those games up top.
They're backing the young players, though, aren't they?
So they are, yeah.
At the moment, you almost back, because they've backed their young players so much and it's been so successful for them earlier in the year, you would think that they would at least be able to get 50-50 out of their wins, up until the point when they have that full team. Nick Maddinson's a really interesting pick.
Tell us a little bit about it, because what I've seen very little of him, what I've seen, I've been impressed by everything except the moustache, which is without a doubt the most ghastly piece of facial hair adorned on a cricket pitch, I would say this century. It is absolutely foul and it needs to go. But as a player, notwithstanding the tash, what are we thinking?
One of my favourite Nick Madden stories was when he made a huge 100 in a limited overs game in for New South Wales and basically batted the whole innings and then went out on the field with a sandwich in his pocket. To say that he's a slightly different human other players, I think is fair. Hence the moustache. You haven't even talked about his hair, which is it looks like a flock of seagulls after they've been electrocuted. he's an interesting guy, but he's not a consistent T20 player so far. He's obviously played a little bit of Test cricket where he didn't quite make it there, but he's an incredible talent. The thing that I find interesting is, generally, I would think, especially with a team like Surrey, rather than get in another youngish player like Nick Maddison, who's also trying to, consistently prove himself, it would have made more sense for them to pick an older, wiser head who fit a role that they needed to pick.
Well, I think their problem there was that they'd got Mitchell Marsh lined up, hadn't they? And then Marsh became injured. And by this stage, you're then losing an awful lot of players. I mean, there's a lot of players that have been picked up by counties already. There are a lot of players who are going to be in the Caribbean Premier League. And this is one of the challenges that the Vitality T20 Blast has. And it's why I guess we should touch on the elephant in the room. It's finally come bursting through with his trunk wiggling around.
That's Hopsy.
and basically making those terrible noises and poking us with their tusks. The 100. Now, the 100 is something that's been brought in response, I think, to the requirement to have a really big centrepiece tournament in England. No one can really say the ECB aren't doing their best to try and get that. This season, with the sun shining, I've got to tell you, the weather in England at the moment is absolutely magnificent. The conditions for taking people off to watch T20 cricket are absolutely perfect. Do you think this blast-off might actually slightly undermine the notion of the 100, because if we're really honest, you can't replicate the conditions you get in India and in Australia in England. Night falls later, it's not as warm, it's very, very difficult to find ways in scrunching all these games into one little segment.
The city structure's different,
exactly. The fact of the existence of the counties and how strong they are, the fact that there are so many of them in Australia, they've gone from 6 teams to 8. The 100 is supposed to come down from 18 to 8. I'm intrigued by how blast-off's going to happen this year, because I can see, with glorious weather set fair, some really decent games, some set-piece occasions in the capital, that it's all going to look like, why do we need a new tournament? We've got a perfectly thriving one at the moment.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem with the Blast, realistically, is the amount of games that are played that aren't seen. So you can have an absolute star like Benny Howe, who...
Benny Howe of Gloucestershire, we should point out.
But the point that you have to point out where he's from kind of proves my point. If he was an IPL player, he would be, so well-known, a Bash player, he'd be so well-known by this point. I feel like the one thing that the 100 can possibly give everyone is that the entire tournament is shown. So I agree with a lot of what you've said, and this, I still don't completely understand the idea of needing to take it to 100 balls and to reinvent it, because T20 seemed to be working really well. Perhaps if you were going to reinvent it, if you really wanted it to be the premier T20 competition in the world, maybe the better thing to do would be to get rid of all homegrown players. Be the first league to basically do what I assume the Premier League football does.
Yeah.
And do it that way. That would have been a smarter option, I would have thought, than doing it this way. But I don't think the Blast being successful is a particularly bad thing for the 100 going forward. I think realistically, even if it is the last tournament, second last tournament. Although they're going to keep something anyway.
Well, they are. They're going to keep the T20 tournament. It's just, it won't take place right in the centre of the summer, will it?
I suppose what I'm trying to say is I don't think the Blast being successful is bad for the 100. I think that the opposite is probably true. But it's a very interesting time for T20 cricket in general, because if the 100 was successful, does T20 cricket become a 100 ball game? Does the Sri Lanka league have a different, situation? And does Sri Lanka suddenly say, well, we're going to have 17 overs and, a cat's going to come onto the field at certain times.
Yeah.
And, there are many different and interesting things that we could do. Like even within the 100, you could have it set up like baseball where one bowler bowls the first 40 balls and we have relievers who come in for 10 and 15 balls and then closers and all those sorts of things. There are interesting things that could be done with that, but realistically, T20 cricket is working, and I think the fact that, you know, the Blast is, I think, has become a fairly major part of the English summer shows that it's still doing well. It may not be set up perfectly for TV, is my biggest fear for it at the moment, which is what I'm... If people don't know who Benny Howell is, that bothers me.
You love Benny Howell. Look, let's wrap up shortly, but before we do, I want you to talk me through some of the people that we're going to see this summer in this Blast competition that are T20 specialists that guys will not have heard of. People like Benny Howell. You've mentioned him. You love Benny Howell with a passion. Go on, tell us a little bit about Benny Howell and then give us a couple more examples.
Well, Benny Howell is one of these bowlers like Fred Spofforth.
Fred Spofforth.
In that he studied baseball to see if there were deliveries that could be using in cricket, which we've seen Glenn McGrath do and obviously Andrew Tye do. So he has an incredible change-up. And so there's... Seam bowling is very interesting at the moment in T20 cricket because obviously it's going towards very fast bowlers, bowlers who swing the ball a lot, and bowlers who take a lot of pace off it. And we've always had them.
A lot of variety as well. Yeah. And Andrew Tye claiming to have 16 different balls is a classic example of that.
Exactly. Right? And you know, we've had a few players like that throughout the 90s, guys like Ian Harvey, whereas now they're becoming a genre of bowler rather than just one-off guys.
So give us a list of these tremendous T20 specialists that we might expect to see.
Yeah, a lot of them are injured.
Right.
So Paul Coughlan, I think, is incredible. I think Paul Collingwood talked him up from the Lions tour to where he dislocated his shoulder and did something incredible. But why he could be a very similar player to David Willey, and that he can be a frontline batsman in the Blast and also a frontline bowler. He's an incredible death bowler. There's a guy called Ricardo Gordon, who I think was a Surrey player. Is that right?
Can't remember, but he also spells Ricardo oddly, doesn't he?
Having a look at my notes. It's auto-corrected to Record Gordon, but I don't think that's his name.
It's Ricardo, that's why.
Yeah. Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
In the power play, and he's battled injury as well, but I really hope he plays in this Blast, because in the power play, he strikes every 10.1 balls. Now, if you strike better than every 18 balls, you're one of the best power play bowlers in the world. So he's got an incredible record. Then there's Richard Gleeson,
Seriously speedy of Northants.
Hey, so over 50% of his balls, I think, are dot balls. And I think he's got the most dot balls, the highest dot ball percentage in the last 3 years of the Blast. He's quick, he's accurate, and, you know, Northants get a lot of goodwill because of the money ball thing and whatever. But they've also just unearthed a really, really talented player. They've also got Sikaj Prasana, who I think should be like on the front page of the newspaper every day. The Sri Lankan leg spinner who doesn't look like he should be a good cricketer, but somehow manages to be unplayable and slog like a crazy man.
With two E's and two G's. It's one heck of a name.
He does have an incredible name. There's a few of those sorts of guys out there. There's also Cam Delport, who is an overseas forward. Do you remember who's the overseas for?
No.
Who is now playing for everyone, and that's why I can't remember.
He's
like Imran Tahir. At any stage, he's playing for three franchises.
Dwayne Bravo. Yeah. Like he might be reaching his 22nd team, I think.
But Delport is another, you know, he's a South African all-rounder, very interesting player. There's a lot of guys like that out there who are now just... Ross Whiteley's another one as well.
Yes, of course, of Worcester.
Yeah, so there's a lot of these guys out there now that are getting to the point where they can probably average about 20, 25 with the bat at a strike rate of 135, 140, but are also genuine bowlers. And this is the funny thing about T20, we've been assessed by all-rounders. It's very rare that you find players who are genuine all-rounders. Generally what happens is a player is good at one skill, but actually pulls back on the other skill. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
So someone like Dwayne Bravo, you're probably never going to pick Dwayne Bravo as a frontline top six or top seven batsman. Carlos Brathwaite was the perfect example of this. At one stage, he was getting almost $1 million in the IPL, despite the fact that he could only bat for four overs and couldn't bowl. He's now improved his game a lot because I think he's worked that out. So I think we'll see that. But I think the other really interesting thing for me is going to be the pinch hitters. Because Sunil Narine has kind of changed what T20 opener can do now. It doesn't matter if you only average 15 if you take seven balls to get to that 15.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of players that I think...
And when you're a frontline bowler to boot, I mean, that's one heck of a valuable player.
David Willey's already showed that, and I don't think he gets enough credit for the fact he opens the batting and opens the bowling, probably because everyone hated the kid who did that in junior cricket. I think Adil Rashid might be another one that we might see do that, because he doesn't... There are a lot of guys who don't have a lot of power when they have to clear five fielders, but clearing two fielders is, men out is not as hard. So someone like Liam Dawson might be another one that we might see that. But I think this might be the pinch hit. We might see a lot of pinch hitters. And the other thing I think we'll see this year in a Blast is probably more spin. I don't think we've seen enough spin. I think there's a good crop of young English spinners coming through, and spinners usually have, across almost all leagues, a lower economy rate than seam bowlers do. Part of that is because they bowl in the middle, but I also think that with wrongans and doosras and all that sort of stuff, that spinners are doing quite well. So I think those are the sorts of things we'll see.
Well, the conditions are going to be absolutely perfect for spin, aren't they?
Have we talked about Matt Parkinson?
You love Matt Parkinson. And Matt Critchley, all the Matts. There are leggies galore. There are going to be spinners galore.
Well, Matt Parkinson's played one season of the Blast, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And I know he was inches away from going to the IPL. That's
wow.
How good that season was. So there's some really good young talent out here. And the problem is, for a lot of English players, is the Blast is so spread out that people aren't sure if Benny Howell is really that good or Ross Whiteley is really that good. And so there are a lot of
dilution of talent across 18 counties.
So a lot of the analytics guys rate it in sort of the third or fourth division of T20 cricket because of the dilution of talent. So we know there are very talented players coming through, but whether their records are inflated because they're playing in this league. But I think that people are going to start to look at it more and more. And also, this is the time you start auditioning for that juicy 100 contract.
Well, there's that as well, isn't there? It's this year and it's next year. And then, as you say, the Juicy 100.
The Juicy 100. Why don't they call it the Juicy 100?
That would be a lot better, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Now, enough of this, because we've been on for ages. And this is, you've got bonus minutes on today's Talking T20. But we're going to bring this to a close. Since I've got the man of the numbery moments, since we have the assistant to the general manager, I want you to give me not just a winner. I want you to be unequivocal. I want you to give me finals day.
Oh, okay.
I want you to give the four teams that make it to finals day. For those of you unfamiliar with how the T20 Blast works, those two groups of nine get whittled down to eight quarterfinalists. They have one playoff, obviously a quarterfinal each, and the four teams that get through play finals day, two semifinals and a final, on the 15th of September. It's a long, long way away.
Yeah. I think in the South group, Mason Crane's out for the year, which I think Hampshire could have won the whole thing, especially Sam Northeast coming in. But with Mason Crane out, I still think they'll make finals day. And I think Sussex will make finals day because if that bowling lineup, as long as that bowling lineup can stay on the field, I don't see how teams could consistently make runs against them. There is always the Colin Ingram effect. But I don't think Glamorgan are anywhere near as good as they were last year. But I could be wrong there.
Now, bear in mind, of course, it could be four South teams and no North teams in the final. For finals day, because they play four semi.
I hadn't even thought of that.
Well, no, it's up to you. Just pick the four best teams in the country.
Okay, Worcester out then. I think I like Worcester. I think they've got an interesting lineup.
Well, they did very well in the 50-over.
Exactly, and I think it's even more set up for T20 cricket. No, I'm going to stick with them. I'm going to stick with Worcester, just because no one expects Worcester.
Okay, you can have Worcester, and then going to give me one more team.
Nottingham.
They're a shoo-in as far as you're concerned. You're confident.
Oh, well, if they don't make the final, then they've done something wrong. If Paul Coughlin comes back, especially, they would be my favourites to win. Paul Coughlin and Mason Crane's injuries are really interesting because I think that Hampshire and Nottingham probably have the best teams on paper. So I think that's the way to go. But the thing with T20 cricket is that all predictions are useless.
They are, but on that basis, what I also want you to pick is the two. The sides are going to finish bottom of the North and South South groups. Because this is always interesting, because we think to ourselves, well, that team's no good. I know Surrey, to their cost, have been beaten by Glamorgan on numerous occasions at the Oval, and their fans can never understand it. The fans turn up thinking Glamorgan will win this, and they're always beaten by Glamorgan. T20 is a strange game, so nail your colours to the mast. Who are the two worst teams in the country?
That's interesting. I haven't had a good enough look. I mean, I want to say Middlesex.
Yes.
I don't think they will come last, but I'd be very shocked if they had a good season.
Yeah. And from the North group?
From the North, well, Durham, I suppose.
Durham. You say that was that sort of gentle despair and despondency, because we all feel terribly sorry for what's happened to Durham over the last.
Well, Paul Collingwood had an incredible season last year, didn't he? I think he made a lot of runs at a very high strike. He might have made 100 at one stage as well. Him and Shahid Afridi, which between them was like, it's like a 90-year-old making 100. But I don't think he's going to make runs again.
And so there you have it.
And they lost Paul Coughlin, who I think helped them last year. I don't think Middlesex and Durham are the two worst teams, but it would not surprise me if they both really struggled.
Well, there you go. Straight from the horse's mouth.
I'm not a horse.
Finally, you've got one more thing that you can force David Warner to do. and you've had half an hour to think about it.
But I've been so busy.
I'd have thought your subconscious would have just been working on this.
What would I make David Warner do? Do you know what I'd like to see him do?
Sand your bat?
The bat that he's given me.
Yeah.
No, I would like to see him do something that would, like, the chicken dance. You know, but every time I ring a bell.
Oh, perfect. It's time for us to finish. We've been going on well long enough. It all kicks off this week on Wednesday, does it not?
That's a good question.
Yeah. Surrey play on the big derby's on the 4th, which is a Thursday. So, yeah, it all starts at Trent Bridge on Wednesday, along with many, many other venues. We're going to be back every Monday / Tuesday, depending on how the fixtures fall and where we're at, looking at the T20 Blast throughout the course of this season. There's about 7 weeks until the quarterfinals. It's that long. And then there's a further 3 weeks until finals day. It's an extremely long tournament, but it's the centrepiece of England's domestic one-day calendar. I hope you've enjoyed listening to us. Daniel Norcross and Jared Kember. Until next time, thank you for listening.
This is ESPN Crick Info.